Have you ever heard of the National Security Agency? If you haven't, you're not alone. It's one reason James Bamford has written two books about it. The latest is called Body of Secrets. Now, the NSA is a huge government agency. 38,000 people work there. But Bamford says it's a top-secret operation.
NSA has a policy they call their policy of anonymity, and the whole idea is to try to keep as low a profile as possible. The director of Central Intelligence is always on TV in one way or another, either talking or at least being shot on camera. The director of the NSA, nobody knows who he is, his name, or anything. It happens to be a three-star Air Force general named Michael Hayden. When I did The Puzzle Palace, my first book on NSA 20 years ago, I did a TV show with Senator Bill Bradley from New Jersey, who was on the show to talk about the economy. But in the car going over there, he said, "What's your book about?" And I said, "It's about NSA, the National Security Agency." And he said, "What's that?" So this is a Rhodes Scholar senator from New Jersey who I had explained what NSA was.
I want to repeat Senator Bradley's question then. What is the National Security Agency?
Well, it's the largest intelligence agency in the world. It's the country's largest intelligence agency. It's three times the size of the CIA. And its job is basically to eavesdrop on communications all over the world, to become America's big ear and listen to what people say different parts of the world, and if it's encrypted, to break those codes.
How is it done? Have they been successful?
Well, they were very successful during the Cold War because they spent almost 50 years focusing on one target, the Soviet Union and its satellite countries, basically. And it did a very good job. It could tell any time a plane took off in Russia, any time a door of a silo opened, they would know it immediately. But the problem is, once the Cold War ended, that technology to be able to do that didn't translate very well into tracking down terrorists. It's one thing to keep track of information in and out of a Soviet airbase or a Soviet naval port or a Soviet army command. It's a different thing entirely because those things are always pretty much fixed. You always know where it's going to be.
And they're big enough targets.
And they're big targets, and they always speak in the same basic frequencies, the same communications channels. It gets to be very routine. It's very different when you're tracking down a handful of people running around the world who don't communicate very much, and when they do, it could be from Kenya or it could be from southern Florida. Probably the biggest problem facing NSA is the language problem. When the Soviet Union and later Russia was the key target, NSA had an enormous influx of people that spoke Russian from universities all over the United States that had majors in Russian, for example, and other Slavic languages. But once the Cold War ended, crises broke out in all parts of the world, and these were places NSA refers to as low-density languages. So when troops went into Haiti, for example, during the 1990s, NSA had a total of one Creole linguist. So you can intercept everything in and out of the country you want with the greatest technological
capabilities. But only one person had to listen to
everything. But if only one person can understand it, you're really in tough shape. And when they went into Afghanistan, there were probably no more than maybe three people at NSA that really spoke fluent Pashtun or Dari, which are the two languages spoken in Afghanistan. I mean, if there's a crisis in Congo, how many people do you think speak Lingala? If there's a crisis along the Burmese-Thai border, how many people do you think speak Karen? So you go into these places of the world where a crisis breaks out within a matter of months, and you need maybe 4 years to develop a really good linguist in this language. So that's one of the key problems facing NSA today.
Well, also technology has changed in the last few years, hasn't it? The cell phone technology is so much more difficult to crack.
Well, digital technology is, yeah. It's information is sent along in packets, so it's not as though you could just listen to two ends of a conversation very easily. And at the same time, there's such a vast amount of information out there that hadn't been out there before. And it floods the ether with all this information. So you've got so much more out there. One listening post, one NSA listening post, pulls in about 2 million pieces of communications an hour. And that's just one listening post.
How do they handle it? I mean, I've heard on the news that they have certain keywords they try to listen for. They try to identify whether a message is worth deciphering by, whether it's got terrorist in it or even, I suppose, Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, I mean,
but all you'd have to do is not use those words, and
right. I mean, that's too simplistic. Nobody's going to use Al Qaeda or you remember Bin Laden told us to blow up the World Trade Center on Tuesday. They're not going to say words like that. So that's what makes it very difficult. Well, the way they try to narrow down the communications is by programming into these very fast supercomputers, not just keywords, but key phone numbers are really the most important part. Every phone call in and out of Afghanistan, for example, would be picked up. I mean, it's not that many, but... And then you target it to certain numbers that you're interested in. For example, if you're going to target Washington and, you know, the Russians, which is what they did for years from Cuba, you target certain prefixes. So you program in the computer to pick out everything with a prefix 456 in it. That's every call in and out of the White House. Or the prefix 688, that's every call to and from NSA, all the unencrypted calls. So then your computer is just pulling out the ones you really want.
And it's still millions.
And then with those, then you start targeting down more and more. Because at the end of the day, if you have all these listening posts and are each picking up about 2 million pieces of communications a day, you've got to get it down where a human being can actually read something and understand it. You know, the Secretary of State, Colin Powell, may be able to read 3 messages, intercepted messages, or 3 NSA reports during a normal day. But the point is, you've got to narrow all that down to a small enough amount that human beings can understand it and issue a report, and other people can actually read and understand those reports.
Now, they do, I assume, in looking at all of these communications that take place, they are looking at American citizens. They are listening to American phone conversations. They are looking at American correspondence.
Well, it gets more complicated than that because there's laws that govern how it eavesdrops on U.S. citizens, which is different from how they eavesdrop on foreigners outside the United States. Actually, anybody in the United States is called a U.S. person, and they're not allowed to eavesdrop on a U.S. person.
Does that mean they don't do it?
No. What it means is that they can't do it without getting a warrant, and they have to get a warrant from a court, which is a secret court. Very few people have ever heard of this, but there's a secret court system that was set up. It's called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, FISA Court. It was set up in 1978, and NSA has to get a warrant from that court to eavesdrop on a U.S. person. The problem is, since 1978, that court has never turned the government down on a request. And if it did, there is a thing known as the Foreign Intelligence Appeals Court, which has the unique distinction of being the only court in the United States never to have heard a case.
This gets scarier and scarier when you look at it, because it's an agency that can eavesdrop, but only if they ask a secret court, which doesn't have to tell us that it met,
right.
Except that there's an appeals court which has never been appealed to.
That's right.
And we can't look at what the records are?
That's right. It's a secret agency that goes to a secret court and who issues secret authorizations. That's right. That's the truth. I mean, I'm not making this up. It's all real. And I mean, to give the other side a little bit, the Justice Department does look very closely at some of these requests that come in and doesn't approve every one. And the Justice Department has turned down requests in the past. It turned down one for Win Ho Lee, for example. The only ones that they have turned down are the ones that have become controversial. They actually turned down one for Zachariah Massawi, the guy that was arrested in Minnesota. So it isn't totally cut and dry, but when it does get to the court has never turned the government down on a request.
James Bamford's book is called Body of Secrets, Anatomy of the Ultra-Secret National Security Agency.